Welcome, Capital Raisers. Today, we get to hang out with Andres Ospina, who's the managing director of the Family Office Club and owner of PitchDecks.com. And he kindly dropped a ton of capital raising bombs of wisdom you may not have heard of enough, like positioning yourself, entertaining family offices, and problems for first-time fund managers. If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 259, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Andres Ospina on the Capital Raiser Show. Heck yeah, dude. One of my partners. As you guys know, PitchDecks is our official sponsor, and the show season 3 is sponsored by PitchDecks. Welcome to the show, Andres. How are you doing, brother?
Hey, Ruben. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm doing great.
Dude, it's been a blast hanging out with you in the Family Office Club. We got a partnership going with Richard Wilson, who's your partner in multiple capacities. You're the CEO of PitchDecks.com. Why don't you break down a little bit about your background, and then we can kind of dive deep into how you formed your relationship with Richard and how that's going.
Sure. So my name's Andres Ospina. I've been with the Family Office Club for about 7 years now. I'm the managing director for pretty much what's one of the largest investor clubs in the United States. Probably I'd say the largest getting there. Definitely one of the largest in the world. Company's been around for 15 years, but about 3 years into me working with Richard Wilson here on this project with the Family Office Club, hosting conferences with family offices, helping ultra high net worth individuals formulate their family offices and organize their family offices, get access to appropriate deal flow, and helping a lot of capital raisers from all industries and asset classes. From hosting a lot of these events, we saw that there was a lot of need for help creating content and positioning themselves as experts in the space. So we launched PitchDecks.com, bought the URL, PitchDecks.com, launched the agency. At the time, our in-house team was about 3 people, one graphic designer, one web developer, myself, and another person that kind of helped us with some project management. 3 years later, we're about an 18-person team, about 40 if you include contractors now. And we're helping companies pretty much make and funds, make pitch decks that actually catch an investor's attention. Also consulting on the right capital raising strategies, because while we teach a lot of capital raising strategies at our workshops, we saw that one, people needed help implementing these strategies and a lot of guidance along the way. And also times are changing. Raising capital today has definitely transformed from raising capital 20 or 30 years ago. And I would say that our clients that are willing to pay for our services have an open mind to that. They have an open mind to the fact that maybe they raised $100 million or $1 billion back in the 90s or the 2000s or in the 2010s. We're in the 2020s now. We're in the 20s, the roaring 20s. And how we raise capital is transforming every single year and has absolutely transformed. And you can't do things the old way. We call it like the blockbuster syndrome, where people get blockbustered out. Blockbuster was at the top, but they didn't innovate. I think the last blockbuster just closed like last year and it was only a museum. So we help people really stay up to speed on what's working and how to really create influence in their industry, in their space, in order to more effectively and more easily raise capital.
Very cool. So we'll definitely dive into some of the stuff that Family Office Club does. We'll talk about what PitchDecks does. They actually do all of the videos for the Capital Raiser Show. So that's pretty amazing. They're a great team to work with. But before we go down any of those directions, let's kind of dive into some of the stuff that you personally have been doing. I think you mentioned that you had invested in some houses. What's been your experience personally in terms of your real estate? And what are you seeing from people within the Family Office Club? What kind of deals are they doing? Is it mostly real estate? Is it venture capital, startup capital, different companies that they're raising money for? Let's start with you, and then we'll go to what are the people in Family Office Club doing?
I've done a lot in my career. I say I'm a career salesman. I'm not afraid of the word sales, because sales is about being an effective communicator and finding solutions for people, by knowing how to find those solutions and make it relatable to them. And a career marketer as well, creating marketing campaigns for a lot of different companies, helping them produce hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. And in terms of capital raising, right, I consider sales part of that, over $10 million in sales within my career. And a lot of my real estate background is in wholesaling single family properties. So wholesaled a lot, worked on the acquisition side and also on the sales side. So building up my database of real estate investors, being able to find them good deals and getting them to trust me, because I was in a competitive space where there were other people that had that property available to sell once we had acquired it. So I had to build trust with my investors so that they would pick up my calls and put their deposit and sign the contract faster than competing investor for those properties. So that's where I really learned about investor relations, about building trust, about not just throwing deals in people's face on first meeting them and really building that relationship and taking time to build it. So when the right deal does come around, they're ready to go for it. And that takes time and nurturing of that relationship. And then also being okay with an investor missing out on a deal, because if they miss out on a deal that you have, they're more likely to, let's say your round closes and an investor wasn't able to get in on time, or they were too hesitant to pull the trigger. The next time around, after your fund or your real estate property successfully goes through its transition, you can show that investor that they missed out on a good deal. And they're more likely to now pick up the phone next time you have the next real estate deal, next time you have the next fund that you're raising for. So a little bit on my background there, but it's an extensive background. I think a lot of my background now, I've been with this company for 7 years now. So a big part of my career has now been working on a lot of these marketing campaigns for these real estate funds and real estate projects. It gives me a whole other perspective. You were at the event with us in California last year.
Yeah.
We had over 600 members there, and I talked to about all of them, and I know their challenges. I get to know their challenges with raising capital, their success rates. I understand what works and what doesn't. You saw we interview dozens of family offices on these stage, and I moderate a lot of the panels. So I get this very unique perspective where I get to interview all of these family offices on their allocation strategy from a very genuine standpoint, right? Really figuring out, what are they investing in? What stands out for them? How does a real estate fund stand out to them amongst this massive pool of real estate funds that are being launched every day? I get this unique perspective of really interviewing them every single month on stage and hearing from them on what stands out for them, what due diligence processes they do, and they're differentiating due diligence processes, what deal structures are most attractive to them, what geographic areas of interest are most important to them, and where they've allocated in the past 12 to 24 months. Like I said, I've been with this company for 7 years. So a lot of my focus now is on helping real estate professionals develop a message around what they're trying to do, so it's not generic or repetitive or just another real estate fund or another real estate deal.
Yeah, of course, that'll help a great deal with the people that are looking to expand their marketing. So you were a wholesaler. You got into some real estate deals. Where was this? Because currently you're in Medellin, Colombia. Where did you used to do real estate?
South Florida. So on the west and east coast of Florida, like Fort Lee, Port Charlotte, Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, Aventura area.
And then Richard Wilson used to live somewhere, I think in Miami or somewhere in that kind of a city.
Yeah, so I was doing that. Yeah, so I was doing my wholesaling in Broward. Well, I was living in Broward County at the time. Pretty much, I'm a big follower of Grant Cardone. Also saw that he had done an interview with Grant Cardone. And just through a mutual friend, they connected us. And Richard was looking for someone to help him grow the family office club and with his events. And I have a major background in events and conference production.
What was your background there? Why did he choose you to help him with that?
Before the Family Office Club, probably had produced and ran over 350 conferences.
Really?
Nationwide. Worked with this company called Success Resources. It used to be owned by T. Harv Eker, Millionaire Mind Intensive.
Peak Potentials, right?
But the parent company is Success Resources.
Okay.
So worked with them, was on pretty much on tour with them for 3 years.
Wow.
And then also due to my sales background, used to conduct a lot of events to recruit salespeople, to do sales trainings. So understanding how to keep like high energy events, how to conduct events, speaking on stage, emceeing, which is a really tough job. emceeing a stage of multiple speakers. That helped. I mean, like I said, I love sales. I think most people are afraid of the word sales.
Yeah.
And I think when I got into this world of capital raising and finance, I was surprised to see people raising $100 million never read a sales book in their life, or were afraid to be salesy, or were constantly asking people for introductions because they didn't want to step up and actually do the selling themselves. And they always want somebody else to do the selling for them. But if you really learn how to be an effective communicator, how to build rapport, how to qualify someone, you'd be surprised how many leads you can find yourself without having to go out there and pretty much beg people to give you introductions. So that was a big thing that
T. Harv Eker is an amazing salesman. I think he had a program called Train the Trainer.
Yep, I did it.
At the Millionaire Minds. I forget what his program
is. Nice, you're familiar. Awesome.
I'm a huge fan, right? So like engaging the audience, getting them to participate. It was a lot of fun. They would talk about sales and then take you through, as the audience member, they would take you through the sales process. And a lot of people would have a hard time being sold. And Harv would turn around and say, hey, if you guys want to become great sales professional in whatever business you're in, you have to start to embrace the sales process. And you have to start paying attention to the way that we are selling, because you're going to be able to take these exact same skills and then apply them to your business and then help create sales within your organization. So I'm a big fan. In fact, I would love actually to kind of go into this. We mentioned that we would talk about what happens at the Family Office Club, and we'll go into that. But let's kind of go into some of the sales process. One of the big things is, like, in order to get a lot of people to buy things that you are offering, you do it to help them solve one of their own problems that they exist. And one of the ways that you uncover this is by exploring their pain points and find out what it is that they want to accomplish, and then show them how whatever it is that you're doing can help them solve that problem. Has this been your experience? Can you talk a little bit about this?
Kind of to go back to what you were saying about engaging an audience and everything like that. I mean, that's one thing that was very surprising when I got into this space and got to talk to so many people raising capital. It really gives me a unique perspective. I talk to dozens of people that are raising capital every day. Dozens of people that are raising for a fund or a startup or a specific real estate project every day, dozens. So one was that surprising factor of how many people don't take time to be more effective communicators, and they're just hoping that someone can do an introduction for them and they think that'll be enough. That was the number one surprising thing. Also, monthly at our conferences, I'm interviewing these family offices, and a lot of them would say to me, Andres, we're humans too. We want to be engaged in an interesting conversation. We don't care if you think you have the best deal or the best fund in the world. But if you're coming to us and you're in our face and you're just trying to pitch us your deal, we don't care if it's the best deal in the world. Like, it's just turning us off from wanting to spend more time with you, and we're going to move on, right? Because there's enough deals in the marketplace. So the fact that these investors want to be entertained too, they want to be engaging conversations. They want to have an emotional response to what you say, and they want to have a good time. T. Harv Eker talks about edutainment. That was a big thing at Train the Trainer, right? Edutainment. You have to educate people and you have to entertain them, and they want to be listened to and understood. Part of it is, how do you get to someone's pain points? You have to ask the right questions. And question asking is a divine skill. It's a magical skill, because there's a many different ways to ask questions. There's many different types of questions. There's qualifying questions. There's closing questions. There's open-ended questions. There's yes or no questions. And the list goes on all the different types of questions that you can ask. So you're in control of the type of questions you ask, which puts you in control of the type of answers you're going to get. So that's number one. So knowing how to ask questions, so you get answers that you want, and you also get to get information disclosed to you that you want. So how can you hit someone's pain points without knowing what their pain points are? You can't, unless you're asking the right questions. But some people don't want to disclose their pain points. You may be overly intrusive if you haven't built enough rapport to ask a question that will really open up that person to express their pain point.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the pain points of, so these family offices that come to the club, they are a lot of times looking to raise capital, and there might be very effective business people with amazing structures and abilities to make great returns, but they may not be so fantastic or would like to leverage the skills of other people, teams, groups, companies, and marketing agencies to more effectively raise capital. And first of all, what is it that they are typically raising capital for? And then we can kind of go into what is it that you see are the pain points of these capital raisers that you can help them address?
I'd say about 50% of the deals I see are real estate in some form, from multifamily to commercial, industrial, medical office buildings, mobile home parks, list goes on. So about 50%. So a lot of real estate, obviously, because on average, anywhere between 25 to 75% of a or more of a family office's portfolio is going to be real estate based. On average, it's going to make up a large chunk of it. And maybe a family office may set aside $500 million family office may set aside $20 million, $30 million to go into some venture funds or try out some venture deals or try out some tech deals. Even crypto, in the past 4 years, you saw family offices start to allocate between 1 to 8% of their portfolio towards crypto because they were willing to lose 8% if the possibility was to make like a 10x, 20x, 100x return, kind of like it's a chance you'll take. So a lot of real estate deals, what I would say is one of the major pain points is one is they're feeling like they're not being heard. So you see a lot of first-time funds. So that's a major pain point because maybe you had experience with developing real estate, managing real estate, and now you feel like it's time for you to start your own real estate fund. But managing other people's money is a different ballgame, and investors realize that. So the number one objection that most first-time fund managers get is, let's see how you do on this fund. And after you complete this first fund, come back to me later, and then I'll invest with you after I see your results.
The track record. How many of these funds have you done? Oh, this is my first one. Let me see how you do, and then we can talk later.
Exactly. So they want to see a track record. And if it's a first-time fund, a lot of times these funds don't even have a website, or the website is already going to hurt their credibility, or the PowerPoint presentation that they created, my 14-year-old niece could have done a better job. These things hurt credibility. And this is what I talk to a lot of people about, because they underestimate the power of a pitch deck or having a good website or having a social media page with some posts. They underestimate the importance of positioning yourself as an expert and sharing value with the marketplace. Number one reason they underestimate it is because 15 years ago, it wasn't that important to write an ebook or launch a podcast. It just wasn't that important. So maybe they had more success back then with word of mouth and with relationship marketing and grassroots marketing. But times have changed. People will do their due diligence by going on social media. People will do their due diligence and be intercepted by your competitors who are actually putting content out. That's the thing. And one of the biggest pain points is, I go back to what I said earlier, is that they feel like they're not being listened to. And part of the reason they're not being listened to is because, once again, we're in an age where we are getting bombarded with so much messaging and information that you need to find a way to stand out. You really need to find a way to make yourself unique. Like you've done with the Capital Raiser show, right? You put value out there. You find more ways to interrupt. Maybe an investor you talk to today will come across your podcast in 20 days, 25 days from now, and then knock back on your door and say, hey, Ruben, I know we spoke like 3 weeks ago. I just came across your podcast because I was on so-and-so's LinkedIn page who you interviewed, and I just happened to see you there. This is the importance of public speaking, because it's incredible when I go out. I've been on a lot of stages. And it's really created an opportunity for me to run into people in the street that have seen me on stage.
Nice.
It makes a difference. And it's like, oh, I left a mark, right? But it's also 500 people saw me on stage, one individual. I can't record 500 names, but 500 people can record one name. So these type of things to kind of set yourself apart are important. And what I always talk about is how people tell me, like, a website's not important, because even if they have the track record, so it's like, a website's not important. Having a good pitch deck's not important. Having some social media and some content or ebook is not important, because I have the track record. It's like, but you're not the only one with a track record.
So people send you a pitch deck, and then how do you break it down? How do you repair it? What kind of advice do you give them? What kind of issues are you seeing with their pitch decks?
But to go back to what I was stating about having like a clean pitch deck and or clean website, and the reason it's important is because you wouldn't show up to a meeting in basketball shorts. Or we show up sometimes to meetings with blazer and a button down, maybe even a tie. Does a tie matter? No, but it's just these little points of credibility that add up. You just look that little bit more polished. And people underestimate those little points of just polishing here, polishing there that add up into the bigger picture. So it's not that having the perfect pitch deck is going to be your be-all, end-all answer. But when you couple it with some other things and being professional and knowing how to follow up without sounding desperate, these things add up to results. Just want to end up that point. But in terms of like pitch deck and how we polish them up, you'd be surprised how many 65-page pitch decks hit my inbox.
I see a lot of those. Every time that I go on a webinar, they're like 40 to 60, sometimes even 80 slides right in the webinar. And then that's the same pitch deck that they provide you.
Exactly. So it's 65 pages. And I don't care if you're my best friend, I'm probably not going to have the time to go through 65 pages. We can have a deep relationship, but I'm going to zone out. I'm going to be looking at my phone, making sure that I'm not getting important text messages, answering an email that comes in. Once again, we have to be aware that of the time and the era that we're in, where there's just so much communication and messaging going on. Like right now, we're on this Zoom. That's one channel. And I communicate with my team through Slack. And I also get WhatsApp messages and iMessages and Gmails. And then I also have to check out my CRM. And then I have my other CRM for my proposals, which I use as Honeybook. I am getting messages and updates. I have Hootsuite for all the social media accounts. Kind of consolidate there. But again, multiple media channels on that route. There are so many places that we get messages from that we have to be aware that a 65-page deck, most people don't have the attention span to review it all. Right?
So when you're at one of these family office club events, you're there, you have a booth, there's a bunch of other people that have booths. I've come across a few of them that are just like, oh yeah, I work with Andres, we use pitch decks. When they come up to you, what are some of the services that you provide for them? What are they looking for in addition to pitch decks and marketing, or is that the main part of it? Is it the, tell me more.
It's the advisory. It's the consulting. Because look, you can get a graphic designer and a web developer to make you a pitch deck and a website. But it's about what about it. For us, it's about giving information on a gradient scale. A lot of the mistake that people do when they're raising capital is that they try to shoot all the information at you. They'll shoot you an email. The email will be 3 paragraphs long and it'll include 3 attachments. And it's like the first touch point. And it's like, that should never be done. We love what we call the engagement email or the 9-word email. So sending out an email to an investor, maybe you talked to them at an event 3-4 months ago and sending them a quick email. Hi, are you still interested in investing in multifamily real estate? Or hi, would you like to discuss commercial real estate in the Georgia and Florida areas or in the Carolinas, right? Just a quick email to create a dialogue. And then from there, once they say, yeah, I'd be interested in hearing more, you send them a one-liner on your unique value proposition as a real estate firm.
Cool. And right? What are some of the services that you guys provide?
So creating that one-liner, that unique value proposition. Wow. A lot of people have, oh, it's like, oh, but we have a one-liner. And the one-liner says like, oh, we have a combined 200 years experience and we act with the highest level of integrity and honesty. Well, I'd hope so. That doesn't make you unique. Right? So a lot of people think they have this unique investor proposition, but they don't. So we'll try to really find out what makes them unique and create that one-liner so they can pique that interest with an investor within the first 7 seconds. So even though it's just a one-liner, we charge a lot for it because once you can hook that investor's attention, your chances, and you can do that more often, your chances of having more pitches and pitching more investors grows exponentially. So that's first and foremost, creating that one-liner, creating a brand that makes sense. So for example, a lot of first-time fund managers come to us with, we're Hercules Holdings or Zeus Capital. And it's like, well, that doesn't say what you do. So we'll rebrand a company. For example, a recent client of ours, we rebranded them to Carolina Real Estate Investment Fund. So you know they're real estate and they're in the Carolinas and they're a fund. We had another client that their name was a Stonebridge Capital, also out of the Carolinas. Stonebridge Capital. We rebranded them to Carolina Multifamily Investments, focused on geographic area and niche. So once you see the brand name, you know exactly what they do. It's not some ambiguous thing that you have to explain or some Greek god. It's like Family Office Club. It's pretty obvious what we do and what we are. Capital Raiser Show. It's like, boom, the branding is clear. So we help rebrand. We develop the unique value proposition. And we also create a one pager. You know, a lot of people have executive summaries out there that are 3-4 pages long. Or they're trying to cram as much information about their fund into one page. But we create a one pager because you should show an investor a one page document on your unique value proposition, on your fund, on your structure. And if there's interest, and maybe a bio, and if there's interest, then move on to the deck. In terms of releasing information on a gradient scale, in terms of like a brand name that is clear, so they know exactly right away what you do. You invest in multifamily in, you know, we have another client that's, I think you've interviewed him, right? I think you've interviewed Scott Myers, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Not sure.
I think he might be on
another
account.
Show. But passive storage investing. They invest in self-storage. So it's a very clear name. So these type of things that just the brand, just the logo and the name, the one-liner, the one-pager, and then the pitch deck. And you're giving information, right? The one-sentence email with no attachments. You're giving information and you're dripping it. And you're only bringing people to the pitch deck once they've actually shown a genuine interest for wanting to review it.
That makes sense. Okay, cool. So I have a book here. It's called Pitch Decks. And it's, I'm not sure, who's the author of this? Is this you and Richard?
Yeah, myself and Richard, correct.
Okay, cool. So I'm actually getting ready to write a book with him. We're going to have Andres come back, and then we're going to go over some of these topics in great detail and break them down at a very high level. I'll go through some of these chapters. I'm actually going to be reading this book to the audience too. So chapter one, brand name and logo, and then one-liner, pitch deck components, one page or insights, website and social media insight, educational marketing. And then we even go into public speaking and videos, and surveys and special reports. So we'll kind of be breaking down some of those. So look out for me reading that book. I'm also going to be reading the Capital Raising book. And then hopefully at some point when Richard and I complete our book, hopefully I'll read that too as an audiobook for the show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But let's go into the lightning round. My first question to you is, what is the best vacation you've ever taken?
I got to say Japan.
Ooh.
Because I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to certain things like, you know, I loved Japanese media a lot as a kid, anime, Power Rangers, and stuff like that. So it was like the home of that. Nintendo is from Japan. So love that. And I got to go to Mount Fuji, and then there's sushi, right? I mean, let's just talk about sushi and having the best sushi in the world and the best seafood I've ever had in the world. So
awesome. What's your favorite book of any kind?
Right now, I am enthralled with The 12 Rules of Life by Jordan Peterson.
Ooh, I haven't heard that.
So yeah, I'm hooked right now.
What percentage of your success revolves around mindset?
100%.
I like that. A lot of people say like 80 or 90. I'm actually of the mindset that it is 100%. And the mechanism happens automatically if you have the right intention. How long do you want to live?
200 years.
Okay, cool. I think that might be the record. I got a lot of people that say 120, and I think I even heard 150. I think I've heard 200 years before too. What do you do to elevate yourself in terms of creating greater success?
I challenge myself every morning as much as I can and just learn of new ways. I love leverage and I love life hacking. So right now, for example, I do my ice bath every day. So I bought a big freezer.
And really?
Freezing water every morning at 5 a.m.
Crazy. Okay, short answer on this. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Learn how to be a master of sales.
Awesome. What do you love best about Family Office Clubs and being a part of that?
The network and the different perspectives around wealth building and wealth management and wealth preservation.
Okay, before we got started, you mentioned that you're an avid outdoorsman. You like to skydive and kite surf. Tell me, what do you love best about being an avid outdoorsman?
My connection with nature, ancestral roots.
Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
100%.
How so?
I believe in magic. I believe in divinity. I consider myself a part-time theologian.
Really? Okay.
So I love to study religions. It's allowed me to just kind of see, find purpose, one, understand synchronicities and the metaphysical. And I think we're starting to see a lot of correlation between the spiritual world and the physical world. And we're starting to find a lot of scientific evidence behind divinity. So
there's an incredible amount of science behind that. If you're interested in that, I'd check out a movie called What the Bleep Do We Know? It's absolutely
I love phenomenal. That. I love it.
Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Near death? It's a couple close calls in automobiles that are like so millisecond that it's just like divine intervention. I also tried to enlist into the military when I was 18 and wasn't able to due to a car insurance issue. And that was like right before like a bunch of my friends got shipped off to Iraq. So I think my life would have been very different had like I had this one little car insurance issue that didn't allow me to get enlisted. And then I know my mother doesn't like me talking about this too much, but you know, she was at 90% liver failure due to cirrhosis of the liver. And she went cold turkey off alcohol and her liver is at like 85% full functioning. And that happened within the course of like 45 days, which was—
Wow. That's phenomenal. I love that. All right. Last question brought to you by Shanna Amigo, one of our great listeners. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I would love to leave the impact of the importance of gratitude and appreciation and what it means to be grateful and appreciative in the present moment and how that reverberates across your entire life.
Yeah, gratitude is a big deal. Very cool answers on the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Razor Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. And shout out to my company, Legacy Acquisitions, and our sponsors, Syndication Pro, the Family Office Club, and PitchDex.com. All right, Andres, how does the audience get a hold of you, brother?
Yeah, Andres@FamilyOffices.com. Andres@FamilyOffices.com or PitchDex.com. Go right there to contact form. You should be able to set up a call with me if you want to talk. So shouldn't be too hard at all.
Yeah. And if you guys are interested in going to the Family Office Club, a lot of times I can get some free tickets to reach out to me. Or what you can do is actually go to familyofficeclub.com and see what events are going to be in your local markets. That they have a phenomenal platform, particular for capital raisers and for meeting high net worth individuals and family offices. All right, good deal. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or family office as they scale in their business?
Just don't underestimate the power of learning good sales skills. And other than that, Ruben, I've had so much fun on this. I love the questions. And
cool. Well, we're definitely going to be back to break down some nuanced topics within the Pitch Decks book and creating some marketing programs and branding. I love talking about branding and marketing and sales in general. So look out for that, guys. With that, we're going to let you go. Dude, this has been a blast. I love working with you and working with Pitch Decks. Definitely. Likewise. Go check those guys out. And with that, we'll sign off. Thanks, man. I really appreciate this.